Is ar fad sin súil an sinna cartús leis a chláir anocht. Tátí bh géisteacht le hagrann na chinne de blas ar BBC Radiohalú. Bia bahiach ó ardan na flaie ag gart leir gur a colm ceile ag flaiciúil na herann jahíle agus a tríideag. Tá oritin de luthair orm sa haon go pásanta a bheith an seo ar an ard an seo ag flaithiúil na hÉireann an seo ó chuí tá sé aontach ar fad agus specialta. We've had such a brilliant week so far. It's great to see so many people in the crowd this evening as the crowd gather in to Deirdre Chalam Cillia for what's going to be a really, really special weekend at this All-Ireland Fla. Now, Sue started things off in great style there. We're going to hear from them again very briefly in a moment. And we've also got the Paddy Callaghan Band coming to stage. Andrea Begley, Bishisha and Shaolian Fostish is coming on to sing a song for us. Might even convince her to sing a second, you never know. Christopher Maguire, agus Tomás Quinn, Aoife Aragain, agus Nusa, Nyark Coyle, agus Nyark Kainche, Lahacht Air Clair Nikicha, and a few other guests thrown in as well for good measure. We'll try and squeeze in as much as we can as the thousands packed to the streets of Derry. Hope everyone's having a good time so far. Anyone listening on the radio, well, if you're at home, just get in the car and come to Derry. There's nowhere else to be this weekend. So enough from me for the moment. We'll have another set of tunes from Sue Grimaigov.
The return of Colm Kill.
What delight it is for us to see you home in Ulster.
A celebration of the saint and the city, the 7th and 8th of June 2013. This is a photograph, and in the photograph is lots of people cheering, and most of them have their phones out just to take pictures. There was a box, it came from Iona, and there was something in the box and no one knew.
Welcome to Colmville.
I was one of the people in the box.
Good people of the city, go out, come back with all your stories.
So when the box opened, it was the Book of Kells, and we came out of it. And we had to give out maps to show everyone where to go. Mayor's Fundy, July 21st, 2013, Derry. I'm wearing my judo suit and I'm holding my medal, and then me and my cousin were biting our medals to see if it was chocolate. I wore my medal to show the mayor the World City Tattoo 2013. Yes, it's me with the strong people, the African warriors, and they were my favourite. On the next page is the Fla, Jacol, and the Heron. Here in this picture, I like the way that it shows that a lot of people came to see the Fla.
Sarah wants the abortion law changed in Northern Ireland. Until a few days ago, she and her husband were looking forward to their first baby. They had just got married. Then she learned the heartbreaking news that all was far from well. Her baby was never going to have a life. Sarah decided an abortion was the only option. But the hospital told her that would be illegal here in Northern Ireland. Angry and deeply depressed, she's told me her story.
I went for a gender scan last Thursday, and when I was there, it was picked up that we couldn't see the baby's head, and from that, we were sent urgently to the Ulster Hospital to be told that we were carrying a baby with anencephaly.
Is this your first baby?
Yeah.
And what is anencephaly? What is that?
Sorry, anencephaly is the worst case of spina bifida. So the baby has no skull formed and no brain. It's brain dead. There's nothing there. There's nothing from the eyes up. To be told that, I mean, the baby, no matter what, is going to be born dead, basically.
Yeah. I know.
Excuse me.
It's okay. Look, I know you want your story to be heard, and I know this is so difficult for you.
terms with.
I know. I'm really, really sorry.
Yeah.
So you decided...
Yeah.
That obviously... When you're in the middle of this, and look, I don't want to put words in your mouth. I want you to tell me from your heart what was in your head to do then.
Well, at the time at the hospital, I was going, when I was told anaphylaxis, I didn't know what that was. And at the time they said that they don't offer terminations in Northern Ireland. And so my only choice basically was to carry the baby either until it passed away inside me or I can deliver. And it would pass away.
Are you okay?
Yep. Sorry, bear with me. So, it wasn't until I had gone home and researched actually what it was, and there's Facebook pages with mothers who have gone through this, and they are all... The grieving process is unreal. It's devastating. I mean... These mothers have all given birth to babies that are dead, and I can't go through with it. I really can't, but here in Northern Ireland, they can't do anything for me because the baby isn't going to harm me, although the baby is dead.
The reason we're here today is to send an open letter to Mary Stopes to show them that there is support within the City of Belfast for their organisation. We don't want to disrupt their services any more than they're being today, so we're here at the City Hall asking anyone that is pro-choice to come along and sign the letter. But you do have to remember, Mary Stopes is a full sexual health and reproductive service. It is not just an abortion clinic. It is there to offer a wide range of services that most people don't feel comfortable accessing to their GP or family planning centre.
There was no big build-up to the opening of the clinic. The news broke on the 11th of October. A week later, the clinic opened. And a week can be a long time in Northern Ireland. The response was quick to follow.
Well, I think it's unfair that unborn children don't have the choice in other parts of the United Kingdom, where we basically have abortion on demand.
Health Minister Edwin Poots.
And indeed, almost 6.5 million children have been aborted, as opposed to having the opportunity to live their lives. In Northern Ireland, we would probably have 150,000 people not alive now, where we'd have went down the same route.
Helen Jones reporting, and the director of Mary Stopes Northern Ireland, Dawn Purvis, is with me. Listening to those voices, Dawn Purvis, has it been worth it?
Well, I think what's important is the hundreds of men and women that have came through our door and accessed our services. And certainly being able to help and support those men and women with some very difficult issues has made this last year really, it has humbled me seeing the need out there and being able to address that need.
How do you quantify that need? You talk of hundreds of men and women. How many women have had early medical abortions here?
Well, we medical abortion is a small part of what we do, and the numbers are small given the law here and given the hundreds of women that are coming to us for unplanned pregnancy consultation.
Can you give us an exact figure?
No, we won't give an exact figure, Karen, and we're not doing anything that the Department of Health doesn't do, because the Department of Health will not give figures out in relation to individual centres or individual clinics.
But Mary Stopes and other parts of the UK do give out figures?
No, they don't give out figures. It's very clear. Let's be very clear about this. The Department of Health publish figures every year about the total number of terminations that have been carried out. They do not give out figures about individual clinics or centres. We have to protect the confidentiality of our clients about the men and women that come to us.
But confidentiality is not impaired by figures.
It is impaired. You just heard from Dr. Gabriel Scally that when you start to drill down into numbers, particularly small numbers, then you start to be able to identify those people.
And I can hear you loud and clear, and you can probably hear the propane gas of the hot air balloon right behind me. I am currently above the Foyle Bridge over Derry City. What an awakening this summer solstice morning. A city skyline not only filled with music, as you can hear, but also the stunning, stunning sight of 7 hot air balloons drifting over Derry. A city this morning which is truly a music city. As it says, I'm currently 500 feet above Derry
We're travelling in a southerly direction at the moment. The Peace Bridge, looking beautiful, is just to my right. And it's amazing. It really is amazing. I was a bit dodgy on the takeoff, I have to say. But once I'm up here, it's beautiful.
I was going to ask you, how are you feeling, Elaine? Because I know you've been pretty nervous about this.
I was so looking forward to it. A little nervous, but I mean, the team here this morning couldn't be any better. I'm just actually going to have a quick word with our pilot, Phil Dunnington, who's been looking after me so, so well this morning. It's almost surreal, this, Phil, isn't it? We can see the whole city around us, but it's very, very peaceful.
It is absolutely peaceful, and I think that sums up the whole of the atmosphere of the city and the scenery and the surrounding countryside. It just makes you feel how wonderful it is to be alive, really.
But it looks like Michael Dunlop's got it from William, unless William's got something up his sleeve. What a finish to this race. He's chased him down all the way down and then made his move as they came out of the chicane at McRoboy. Conor Cummins comes past us as well. Now then, this looks like Hutchinson trying to go up the inside of Guy Martin. Oh no, his back wheel squirreling around everywhere as well. Michael Rutter just be ahead of them as well. What a great little dice that is between those three riders. Next round it should be Simon Andrews. It is Simon Andrews. And we have Josh Brooks coming into view now as well. But it looks like it's going to be Michael Dunlop who's going to get the win from William, unless William can find something on the coast road as they head towards the chequered flag.
William pulls out to the right-hand side. He was close across back hill. William's going to pull to the left-hand side of Michael. Michael squeezes him to the curve a little bit. William jumps up the inside. Wow, incredible move. William on the brakes. Amazing stuff.
And he gets through the chicane a little bit tight, but no, he's still ahead of his brother Michael. Out onto the coast road again, and it's William. Michael will be trying to, the only one place now is the last corner. They come up round the top. Michael loses out. Yes!
Michael!
William takes it.
Is he going to do it? Michael's up the inside! Oh, dear Lord! My word, William Dunlop takes a big bite win. Listen to this!
Well, it originated really in a memory of this particular forge, which I, in fact, had never entered. I went past this particular door for probably about 5 years on my way to a bus stop.
This and may be his very first appearance on the airwaves. Recorded in Broadcasting House in Belfast in December 1966, Heaney is interviewed by John Boyd.
Your background was a rural one.
Very much so, yes. These particular childhood experiences took place in County Derry, on a farm there. I was lucky in that I lived in a society that has now completely disappeared. Even I, at 27, can say that I have seen a society changing completely within the first 15 years of my life, really.
It was almost a medieval culture in one way. Horses, wells, buckets and water, milking cows, fires lit every morning, the world renewed. The church was the centre of the year's rhythms, really, you know, the feasts and so on. I must say, when I read Chaucer, you know, I sort of recognised it. The Wife of Bath, people going up the church showing off and so on. And it was a good preparation for reading all the literature of Europe up to about the 16th century.
The young Seamus Heaney's love of language opened up a path from Moss Bawn to the wider world. But as he explained in this interview with Leon McCauley, the radio continued to inspire.
I also remember school's broadcast, hearing a BBC broadcast. That was a big event anyway, because it was like a free class, you know. You were listening to the radio.
This is the weather the cuckoo likes. And so do I. When showers betumble the chestnut spikes and nestlings fly, and the little brown nightingale bills his best.
The poem that was spoken was Thomas Hardy's Weathers, and it was spoken by that rather older, commanding BBC elocution style of voice. This is the weather the cuckoo loves, so do I. But actually, it was glittering for me.
It's damned hard work, I could tell you. You've no idea what a blacksmith could have done. Like, every house needed a blacksmith. For instance, a fireplace. They needed a fireplace, the smith had to make it. They needed a pair of tongs, the smith had to make it. They wanted a poker, the smith had to make it. Everything that was needed in them times, the smith made them.
And what did you think when Seamus wrote that famous poem, The Forge?
Well, you see, Seamus was a lad, exactly a mile down the road he was born. And you see, a whole lot's caught up when they tell me, come on, there, sweet. I say, recite that poem for him. They say, all I know is a door into the dark. Now, why did he say that? And the answer to it was, he never had been in when he wrote that poem. That's why he started off, all I know is a door into the dark.
The anvil must be somewhere in the centre, horned as a unicorn, at one end square, set there immovable as an altar, where he expends himself in shape and music.
The anvil crying like a unicorn in the centre of the floor. That's there, that was his imagination. Years after it, first time he's been by his use, he said, oh, this time he come in, first thing he done, he walked up to the anvil there. Right up, I was standing at the door watching him, and he lifted the ham on it. There's that, he says. I had showed him how to hammer, you know, like that. And then you do that, and why you do that is your hand's here, and your hand gradually slips down. And that's where you hit that to get your arm back again.
So it keeps a rhythm going as well?
Keeps a rhythm going as well. So I say, and the Seamus come in, that's what the first thing you do, just to be, how's that?
It's green. It's sort of green. Like a grassy green, and which is unfortunate if you're a footballer.
Yeah, they're not hard to see.
Exactly. So there was that whole big kerfuffle about the outfit that Man United wore a few years ago. They wore a grey, and then they said they had to get rid of it because... Was it Man United or was it England?
It was.
England?
No, it was Man United.
Man United.
And we'll cut that bit out. Yeah.
Could have put any team in there.
And, they got rid of it because they said that they couldn't see the other players. And green, surely, is the worst one. And this one is a particularly Ferguson two-sword green. It's a proper colchy lion. If you lay in a field in this, you could sneak up on any sheep you want. It's that kind of... It's that green.
Can I
and
ask,
it's got little flashing down here.
Why do you want to sneak up on a sheep?
What?
Why do you want to sneak up on a sheep?
You never sneaked up on a sheep? Oh, very funny.
Is that the way you play football?
Is that the way you play football in the country?
What?
You chase sheep?
Yeah.
Would you not
it's a different game
dressing?
You're playing, that's not football.
Would you not be better off dressing in like a Clancy Brothers Aaron jumper to sneak up on a sheep? Because that way you could stand behind him and chat to him for a while, you know? Get a conversation going. That, like, do you really lull them into a false sense of security if you look like one of them?
Sorry, you're accusing me of being weird and you're standing chatting to a sheep. I am merely lying in a field hidden from a sheep.
You're hiding from the sheep. I'm just being honest with the sheep. I'm coming up here long enough to know that I have to hands across the divide. I need to talk to the sheep. I need to focus on our commonality for our shared future together.
It's a shared future.
I want you to just to play an alphabet. Now, what I want you to do is tell me what it is you see in the picture.
Tom brings me to a cell to meet Pat. He's a serving prisoner who teaches fellow inmates how to read.
Have you been shocked by the levels of illiteracy?
Unbelievable. Hmm. I did not believe it. In McGabry Prison on remand, I found out about adult illiteracy. So an exam they give us, an entry exam they give you to see where you are in education. And I thought it was quite patronising. And I approached the teacher who was doing it. He explained to me, there's 10 of us taking that we test there now, 10 new arrivals. At least 5 of them will be completely illiterate. And I did not believe it. I thought illiteracy died out in the 30s. Step 1.
Buh.
Babies, we might as well say.
Kuh.
They've no idea about anything.
Arrow.
Scurry.
Butterfly.
So you've been operating kind of within a scheme called toe.
Dog.
By toe.
Yes.
Egg.
Just on the phonetic way of teaching the sound of a letter, the sound of a word. What's this?
Feather,
So then we'll move on to letters of the alphabet.
What have you seen inmates gain from this?
A sense of worth, a sense of achievement, which is very good. And when they reach that sense of achievement, 70-75% of the people I work with have continued on with their education after leaving prison, that I know of. Young Thomas, a great fella, told all his life he was stupid and believed it. Had a chance in here and excelled. He's sitting O-levels at the minute.
What do you get out of it?
A sense of achievement.
helping others that are less fortunate than me. Payback. I broke the law. I'm in here. I've left people out there who shouldn't be in the state they're in, so I need to pay back to society.
Can I ask why you're in?
I'm in for kidnap and armed robbery.
Why did you do that?
Midlife crisis, let's say. Wanting to belong. I don't know. I'm not sure. It's one of the things you don't think about. I run a victim impact programme showing the impact of crime on people. We come in here, we get the goods. We're all right this way. We're not waking up in the middle of the night in a cold sweat thinking of someone in our house. I'm trying to point that out to the younger prisoners to try and make sure that if it does come to the point where they're going to break the law, they can think about that for a second.
If somebody had done that to you before you did the kidnapping, would you have listened to them?
Of course. Of course I would have. I have a wife and three children. Of course. I get it tight. That means I get it hard sometimes. I look at their photos and it does. Of course it gets there. There's nothing you can do about it.
They're all over the walls here, yeah.
Apart from those. But,
well, we'll ignore the scantily clad ladies.
Well, you see, you have to do that in prison. Or they think you're odd. You need at least two.
At least two.
At least two. Well, I think you're strange.
Just before the war started, there were four women. There was Dorothy Carson, there was Joan Wickham, there was Dorothy Evans, and there was Lillian Metzger from Lisburn, all of whom were here on charges of having tried to blow up Lisburn Cathedral.
Belfast Newsletter, 2nd of August 1914. The suffragette militancy came to an explosive climax in Ulster when a bomb exploded at Lisburn's ancient cathedral. A hole 4 feet deep was blown at the chancel end, while strewn about were pieces of masonry and fragments of glass from the stained glass window.
In the few months before the First World War, violence escalated in terms of militancy. In the north, militancy really begins in April as the Ulster suffragettes attack the Ulster Unionists, who had promised them a vote in a provisional government and had then withdrawn the promise. So golf clubs, race courses, institutions associated with male enjoyment and also with male power, churches as well, were all attacked by the suffrage movement.
10th of April. The latest suffragist outrage is the destruction of the stately County Antrim mansion, Orleans. Postcards bearing the following were fined: justice and fair play for women, or militancy must forge ahead. May 1914. The Cavehill Bowling and Tennis Club was destroyed by fire. Only the brick foundations remain.
Well, Cazares, good pro that he is, and remember, this is fight number 50 as a professional for him. And he came from a very tough school away back in Mexico where you have to be tough even just to survive to get your lunch money. And left hand. Lovely. Oh, he's got him with the left hand. Lovely. Frampton gets him with the left hook. What a left hook by Frampton.
Lovely, lovely.
Cazares, just as we were saying how tough he was,
yeah,
got himself caught with the left hand. Count is 8-9. He's not going to make it. He's out. And Frampton has won it in the second. What a left hand by Frampton. Teed him up with the right. Changed it beautifully, switched from orthodox to southpaw, kept his man with the left hand, and Cazares is looking at the referee, yeah, Victor Loughlin, who counted him out, and 1, 2, 3, 4 to 10 is exactly the same in boxing terms, whether it's in English or in Spanish, but what a finish by Frampton.
It's so bad, it is beautiful.
People grow up listening to it throughout the years, like, and it's sort of embedded in their heads.
It's probably the most important song to the Protestant Unionist Loyalist community.
And it's on the 12th I long to wear the sash my father wore.
Valerie Quinn is chairperson of the Confederation of Ulster Bands.
It's the one piece that you could guarantee that virtually every band knows. And it's definitely the one course that you could guarantee that every person spectating at the 12th of July knows. And it's almost like a reciprocal relationship between the bands and the spectators at the side of the road. You know, that there's an excitement, and when they start it, there'll be a cheer from the crowd. And that's probably why the sash is so enduring.
Here I am, a loyal Orange man, just come across the sea. I have sung this on the 12th, the likes of after the parade, obviously the social element of the day. When parading's over, the celebrations are over, and the band then would have a bit of a social gathering, so it would be sung, yes.
I'm sure that everyone has their own version of the song, but a few iconic elements turn up in most of them. The 12th, the Siege of Derry, the battles fought in Aughrim, Enniskillen and the Boyne, and of course the actual Sesh itself. Trevor Stewart is a member of the oldest marching band in the country, the Churchill Flute Band.
It tells a brief story in that it's about an Orange man going to see his brethren in Scotland, and basically about having a good time with them, singing and dancing. And then it goes on to talk about how he has to leave now, and he hopes that they'll pray for his kind of safe travel back home.
I know, it's very unreconstructed mail, but it's a great record. The Faces, not yet Rod Stewart and the Faces, that was to come a few years later. And Stay With Me. Ronnie Wood and Rod Stewart, they were the ones who were up all night writing them words. Great single from 1971. And I think Rod was much better when he was in a band of his equals. I saw footage of the Faces doing that song live on some TV show, actually playing it live too. And it works so much better whenever there are big personalities around him. Of course, turned out that Rod, the solo singer, a solo career happened because he was the most energetic of all the Faces. Wood and Lane, the two Ronnies, they never really matched him for that get up and go. That's what I read anyway. And I believe everything that I read. If you know better, then you know the text number. Of course, if you're Rod and Ron, you may not know the text number, 81771. Get in touch. Twitter at Mickey Undertone. First show today, as I said, and with great timing, I've been sent a 5-CD box set from Cherry Red Records. It's called Scared to be Happy. The subtitle is A Story of Indie Pop, 1980 to 1989. Now, there's obviously some great records in there somewhere. No Smiths or Orange Juice, say the sleeve notes. The man who wrote the sleeve notes says they couldn't get the licensing sorted out. Fair enough. If you haven't got them, then, well, you're not the person to buy this anyway, if you haven't got enough Smiths records anyway. Two records from today. First, The House of Love, the great white hopes of guitar-loving music writers back in the day. The day was 1987. Their career didn't really happen for reasons too long and boring to go into, but they made this, and many a band never got near making a record as good as this. Shine On, The House of Love.
Well, it was written in lights as part of Lumiere only 2 weeks ago. And tonight, it's the Undertones hit Teenage Kicks that's set to bring our concert to a close. But this time, with a special twist. A new Undertones has taken to the stage, made up of members of Little Bear, The Clemeens, and Soak, backed by the cast from tonight's show, A Year in a Night.
The UK City of Culture 2013 has been characterised by pride, nurturing and reinvention. And that's how we all hope it will continue. And I do believe St Columb and this mural above our heads might well be smiling. From all of us here in St Columb's Hall, good night.
Good night.
Teenage dreams so hard to beat. Every time she walks down the street, another girl in the neighborhood. When she's mine, she looks so good.